Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Each year, more than 450,000 kids show up in the emergency room to be evaluated and treated for a head injury. Now, no parent relishes the idea of taking their child to the hospital with a concussion, but growing concern about the long-term effects of head injuries have made that already stressful situation even more fraught. And the best course of action isn't always clear. One idea for improving the quality of care is to bring parents even deeper into the decision-making process with a technique known as shared decision-making. Sounds logical, but a new study finds that it doesn't necessarily change how kids are treated as much as you might expect. Eric Hess is professor of emergency medicine and vice chair for research at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and lead author of that study. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What are some of the factors that go into ranking the severity of a head injury and then dictating treatment?
So the Pediatric Emergency Care Applied Research Network developed two prediction rules, one for children that were less than 2 years of age and one for children that are 2 to 18 years of age. And they identify two high risk factors that would immediately make a physician and or parent concerned that a CT scan would be indicated. And the high risk factors are a Glasgow Coma score less than 15 or altered mental status for a child that's less than 2 or signs of a skull fracture on physical examination. If either of those factors are present, the child would be viewed as high risk by the clinician and a CT scan would be immediately recommended. But there are other low risk factors that indicate some risk but not no risk for a serious head injury, and some of these might be vomiting after the injury, confusion after the injury, or other signs that are typically signs of a concussion that present differently depending on the age of the child.
I would imagine that the number of kids who show up falling into that intermediate category, that kind of gray area, is probably pretty large.
Mm-hmm.
What are the benefits of getting a CT scan, a brain scan, and what are the possible drawbacks? Why wouldn't you do that if it gives you more information?
Typically, if a head CT scan is obtained, then the parent would likely know more quickly that there's not a serious injury causing bleeding in or around the brain. There's also other benefits for CT scan, and not only involve more immediate knowledge, but just more precise information. There are also drawbacks to the CT scan as well. There's radiation exposure. It may be associated with a low long-term risk for cancer. And it also is also more costly than would be close observation by the parent. And in most of these cases, there is no serious injury or bleeding in around the brain. And the CT scan isn't indicated. And if the child is watched closely by the parent, the symptoms themselves can determine whether or not there's a serious injury.
As an emergency room doctor, as awareness of the potential long-term risks of concussion has gone up, have you seen increased pressure from parents for more aggressive treatment or, you know, to use a CT scan more frequently to make sure that there isn't a head injury?
Yes, we've definitely seen that. And the sort of increased public emphasis on concussion has really cause physicians to really broaden their conversations with parents, because a concussion is signs really of almost like bruising of the brain if it's injured. And it can cause symptoms such as confusion or headache, but a concussion doesn't have findings on a CT scan necessarily that indicate bleeding in or around the brain. You can't diagnose a concussion with a CT. And so parents will often come in appropriately concerned about the risk for concussion in their child, unaware that the physician can make that diagnosis just based on the history and physical examination.
So you looked at whether or not something called shared decision-making could help parents make better decisions and perhaps cut down on the number of CT scans that were performed. And interestingly, it didn't change, really, the number of CT scans, the number of patients who chose to have a CT scan. But it did change how parents felt about the process. It made them feel more informed and more confident, which I guess seems pretty logical. Was any of this a surprise to you?
I think the part that was a surprise to me was largely that there was less imaging and diagnostic investigations within the week after the emergency department visit. I didn't expect to see that.
What does that mean in terms of the decisions that they were making? They were going for immediate treatment, but maybe not coming back as much in the week afterward?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the use of the tool and shared decision making had no effect on the choice of immediate treatments in the emergency department. But I think that that increased knowledge and increased comfort on the parents' end resulted in probably less aggressive or less actively seeking investigation after the emergency department visit, and more comfortable watching their child's symptoms afterwards, now that they're empowered with knowledge and to know what to look for.
I understand that it's important to have evidence to base medical practices on. But in some ways, this idea of shared decision-making, of presenting parents, those making the healthcare choices, with the scientific evidence, the pros and the cons, and really involving them in the decision-making, seems like maybe that should just be the default for the way healthcare works. Why isn't it?
I think there's several factors that make shared decision-making difficult. One is a consistent use of common terminology and language that parents can understand, and physicians have variable skill in their ability to describe the how and the why behind why treatment is being delivered in ways that parents understand. And the tools that we've developed were developed with the input of parents and patients, and using terms that we got feedback, we were confident that the patient would understand. And so developing ways to consistently communicate with parents is a key step that these tools provide.
So what advice would you give to parents going into this kind of situation? I mean, what should they be looking for in their children? And also, what should they be asking for from their healthcare providers?
I think the things that they should be looking for in their child largely are related to changes in behavior, or a severely worsening headache or vomiting, or if their child is just somehow not perceiving or recognizing things around them appropriately. Those are the types of symptoms that would make me worry. In terms of what they would hope to get from their physicians, I think it would just be in asking their physicians why they're making a particular recommendation for or against a head CT, just to make it more clear and transparent to the parent what the decision-making process is for their child, really in such a way that they can be engaged in that process as well.
Eric Hess is professor of emergency medicine and vice chair for research at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.